This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, it is indeed. How are you doing, Mike?
Well, I'm starting to warm up now that we're indoors, and I'm not doing some work outside.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, we were on top of a mountain out there toward Glide. I mean, on the very top.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The wind just blew through there wonderfully. And me and two other guys, we did a cleanup pruning. You know, it's one of our regular clients. And
yeah.
I'll tell you what, my hands went absolutely numb. And, of course, they didn't have gloves. And so, consequently, I just froze to death.
Wow. Man, I tell you, it wouldn't be hard to do today.
Oh, no. When you're on top of the hill, there ain't no protection up there, and that wind comes whipping, and it just blows stuff everywhere.
You can feel it in your bones and out.
Oh, yeah. I'm about halfway through, about three-quarters of the way through,
yeah.
Let's take a break. And I sat in my truck with the heater full blast for about, maybe 10 minutes, put my hands on the,
did you feel
on
it?
The hot air. Yeah, finally, I could move my fingers.
Oh,
but that didn't
gosh.
Last long. 5 minutes later when I was outside.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, enough of that suffering. thank you for listening today, if you are listening. And if you're not, well, you should. And this is a lawn and garden show, but sometimes I get off course and go into some other directions, like probably today I will.
China.
Well, no, I haven't been to China. I have no desire. But this is a show for suggestions for your yard or tips for your landscape. How to prune, how to plant, how to choose plants, where to plant them, and soil, fix your lawn, all that kind of stuff. So if you have a question, please call 673-4464. We'll have a discussion. If you have a problem, I'll try to solve it for you, and most of the time I can. And most of the time when I ask a few questions, I get the idea why something's not working, because I've got a couple of years of experience here, so
cool.
It works. But prior to that, here's kind of a not a commercial, but it's a I don't know what you would call it, but
a promo.
There you go. It's a few nights ago, my wife and I took a ride out there to Garden Valley to see the Christmas lights at River Forks Park.
Nice.
Oh, what a show place. It's amazing. I have never, I went when they first started years ago. We went a couple times, and it was okay. And, it was kind of something neat to do and take the kids out there, blah, 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 and look
right.
at that. But they have come a long ways. And the people that have put that together, they should be commended. They should get the medal of whatever from the city of Roseburg or Douglas County. I mean, they do a fantastic job. It was better than Disneyland, for crying out loud.
Nice. And a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah, a lot cheaper. $10 to get in, drive around,
That ain't nothing.
And like I said, I remember, I think it started about 26 years ago,
somewhere in there. Yeah.
Because I was a commissioner at the time, and we approved it and said, yeah, go for it. And it was nice back then. It was okay, but
yeah.
It was no comparison to what it is today. They've really come a long ways. So, when you fast forward to 2021, you see some amazing results. And like I say, the people who put all that together, you have exceeded all expectations. It's quite a draw. The traffic, as you turn off Garden Valley Road to head down to River Forks, the traffic was backed up all the way up to there just to get in.
Oh, my gosh.
and we waited in the traffic line, I'd say a good 15 minutes before we finally got to the point where you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't matter. Everybody's going really slow.
Right.
And there's so much to see. I mean, both sides. I mean, they've got things. It was just amazing.
I'm surprised there hasn't been any rear end collisions.
Well, there could have been because, you know, you turn your lights off.
Right,
right. You know, you got your parking lights on, the yeah. little things, and you can hardly see anyway. So, you know, it's dark.
Especially on a foggy night.
Oh, gosh. It wasn't foggy, thankfully. But like I say, that the traffic was bumper to bumper all the way through that thing.
Jeez.
And so, but it was very impressive. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank all the folks that worked on it and do all that they do. That was great artistic work. So if you haven't been out there to see this display of lights, you're missing a great Christmas display. So go see it. It's worth the $10. You know, you can have 50 people in your car. It's still $10.
That's with masks.
It's easy, man. And no masks are allowed in the park.
No.
Okay. Right. Oh,
okay, Dallas.
Yeah. Hear that, Dallas? You can go. Anyway, finally, hey, we got a real rainstorm this past week or so.
I mean,
it dumped us a good amount of rain. The creeks are running. My little creek is boiling through my place, and my ponds are filling up, and the rivers are just, I love it. You know, usually when you go across the Umpqua Bridge there in downtown on Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
All summer long this year seemed like there was more rocks. Mm. All I could see was rocks and a little trickle of water going through there. You go there now, you don't see a rock one. I mean, it's just, woo, like the old days.
Yeah.
So...
1964.
Well, not quite that, and we're not going to go that far, I'm sure, but...
But let's hope not.
No, I don't want to do that. But the creeks and the rivers are roaring, and the reservoirs are filling, and we haven't had this kind of rain in about 4 or 5 years, really.
Wow.
And packed into that. You know, we've had a little bit here and there, but then we've had so many dry periods. And now, man, it's just cooking out there. It's not raining real hard right now, but it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not evaporating. It's coming down, you know.
Instead we have of more rain up. On the way.
Yeah, that's what I hear. You guys keep saying that, so I'm depending that you're telling the truth. Because
we don't lie.
I know. You just have wrong information. from the weather guessers of the big shots or
up
whatever.
Up north or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love it. And I'm quite thankful for the rain and the snow simply because of the agricultural business that I'm in and the overall, we grow a lot of plants. We need to have that summer moisture in the soil so our trees can grow, that kind of thing, because in the last, 3 years, my wells have been very slow in recovery. We've never run out of water, but we have to pay strict attention to how long we have a particular zone on plants, and we're giving them enough to survive, but not really enough to really flourish. So this coming spring, it should be a whole lot different because of the water table is way up too, and that's a good sign. It's also a good sign for all the ranchers, the farmers, and all those out there that depend on that rainfall and cool weather to grow their crops, to keep their cows eating and horses eating and things like that. And as I spoke about the Christmas tree business here a couple of shows ago, there's probably... I think about 30, they said a third or about 30% of the Christmas tree growers in the state of Oregon got really, really hit hard with this last long, hot, dry summer and very little rain last spring. So there was not a whole lot of irrigation going on. And the smoke and the fires and all that kind of stuff, they lost about 30%, 35% of the Christmas trees that they would normally sell all over the country and even into Mexico and other places. And you can tell that, of course, by how many Christmas tree stands you've seen around town. In fact, we didn't get any cut Christmas trees this year because the prices were way up there. And there are very few available if you could find them at all. So we have our live trees in pots that you can, you know, bring it in and decorate it and then plant it in your yard after Christmas, that kind of thing. But not too many people are keen on that for some reason or another, but it works and you can do it. But the Christmas tree industry, even the seedlings they plant after they've harvested, most of those seedlings died because of the drought and the heat this year. So there's going to be a real gap, not just this year, but in years to come, probably for the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a shortage of real Christmas trees in the state of Oregon, which is, they don't see that. That's just the way it is. But this rain is doing well to recharge our water table. We're still below our annual precipitation rates and the averages, but a few more storms like this, we'll be back to normal, you know, probably by March, maybe April, if this pattern will continue and we get slammed a couple more times and have a good snowpack all at the same time. And from all indications, there's a good snowpack being built, even though it's a little late. It's still being built. And like I was saying earlier to where I was working today on top of a mountain, Glide area, it was snowing on us when we got there. Not very much, just a little bit of snow. Then that quit, and then it rained, but the wind blew, and it was colder than you can imagine it was cold. And thankfully, we were only there about 3 hours. But and you could see through the clouds, like Mount Scott and some of the other ones that were nearby, they're pretty white and look pretty good. So it's building, and hopefully it'll continue to build. And you know, I've watched for the last 2 years as many of our native trees have died, you know, because of less water and less rain. And I've had some go gunny sack on my own place, not a lot, but probably, you know, maybe 30 or 40 that I can actually see. And it's kind of interesting. It's like the tree that was in front of the courthouse, but that's a different story. But they start dying from the top because there's no groundwater that they can suck up and the roots can suck up and send up into the tree. And so consequently, the dying part starts at the top and then just works itself down. And then by the, you know, August, September, pretty much the whole tree is gone. And it's, you know, it's a firewood thing there. Or you can, if it's large enough, like a good sized Doug fir, and you have enough of them, you can harvest them before the bugs get in there and begin to eat them up. But, you know, it's something that we all should look forward to, is in getting as much moisture back here in good old Douglas County in Oregon that we possibly can. You know, and many of our small streams had dried by July and August of this last year. And then, of course, springs and wells that rural folks, farmers, depend on were low or even non-producing. And they had to either haul in water or try to dig another deeper well, which is a very costly proposition. And my house, I operate on a spring, and that's been in use since 1977 when I built the spring box.
That goes back a day or two.
Yeah, I was probably about 90 then, but but it finally quit this past summer. Quit not totally bone dry, but not enough to supply the house.
Oh.
And so I had to install a water tank, an extra water tank, closer to the house, up above the house, and you know, one of them big old black things. It was a 1,500 gallon tank, and then I had to hire, I forget what the guy's name is, but he drives water trucks and fills up tanks for us people that don't have water. I only had to get two tankfuls, and that lasted me until we got that first set of rains, and then then all of a sudden the spring becomes more active, and then you have sufficient water to go. And I checked my big pond up there in my canyon earlier today, and it was 3/4 full. And
a good sign.
Yeah, it's a good sign. So I had to open up the gate valve and let some of it out so it doesn't come on over the top. So anyway, You know, we all depend on that rain and that snow here, and it's a real blessing that we're getting it. Do we have a call or something?
No, we have that.
Yeah, you had your hand on the trigger, man.
I did. We're off and running into another break. We'll be right back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Mike back? Alan Mile, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. We're talking about Albuquerque and all kinds of things.
Oh, here. Yeah, and the 40 feet of snow that Albuquerque got. You know, I listened to Kyle just a little while ago, and he said that from Ashland to Redding is a blizzard.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I thought, whoa.
That's not good.
No, that'll slow traffic down.
Oh, real,
real good time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been talking about the rain a little bit here, and I'll wrap it up here pretty quick. But if you have a call, 673-4464 is the number to call. So if you get tired of this rain, just remember that we can't live without it. Our native forests need the rain. Our streams, or rivers, the fish, have to have the wet stuff for several months each year. That's the way it is. And without it, we do not exist, if you will. That's a nice way of saying you die.
Extinct.
Extinct. Oh, that's where people used to live. Yes, I know. 1,000 years ago. Okay. So when choosing plants for your home, it's important to know what the heat and the water requirements of that plant, what it needs to survive and grow well. And the last few years, that's been a challenge in my business. You know, when folks come in to the nursery, and if I happen to be there, I'll wait on them. And they say, well, I'd like to have this and this, and I'd like to have this blooming, and et cetera. And then I start asking them questions about, well, do you have any shade in your yard, or do you have this, or what's your ground like, or what's your water situation like? And oftentimes some of the plants that they want to have and get started, with all the heat that we've been having and all the dryness that we've been having and experiencing, it doesn't make any sense to plant that particular plant. So I try to, you know, show them a substitute that might be close, but more hardy. Mm. And that's the kind of thing that we've had to put up with, especially in landscaping. When I create landscapes and we landscape a yard, You got to have that kind of information rolling around in the back of your brain so that whatever you plant is that in fact going to survive. Mm-hmm. And that the folks that you're planting it for have sufficient water to be able to keep it alive. And that's been very critical, like I say, the last 3 to 4 years for sure. So the heat oftentimes is, you know, it comes on in the end of July and like all of August and even into September. We've had a whole lot of days 90 plus degrees, and some of them, a few of them in the hundreds. And most plants, if they are established and, you know, been in the ground for a couple of years, can handle that kind of heat a whole lot better than something that was newly planted that doesn't have a mature root system that can, you know, get it over the hump, if you will.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of things you need to consider when you're looking at plants and wanting to landscape. You know, the plant just needs to survive and grow well. For instance, can a rhododendron survive in full sun? Well, there are some varieties that'll grow in full sun, but most of them need a bit of shade in the afternoon. And then you ask yourself, well, what are the watering requirements for rhododendrons? Well, when it's hot, when you have a hot, prolonged summer, and it's hot every single day, you're going to have to adjust your watering schedule. You're going to have to actually pay strict attention to the the dampness of the soil around the plant. Even if you usually only water, say, once a week or once every 10 days, when you have a prolonged dry spell, when it's very, very hot every one of those days, that plant is evaporating water through its leaf structure on a daily basis. Consequently, is drawing that water for that moisture from the ground, and how damp is the ground underneath. So you may have to play it by ear and adjust and actually dig into your soil to see, and I've said this 1,000 times, if it's damp, it's probably okay. If it's dry, you got to soak it good, especially in the middle of July or August, yeah, or even into September. So you have to be very selective on your plant selection. How's that for what would we call that?
A scientific response?
Yeah, right. Oh, golly. But, you know, like you wonder, what are the watering requirements for roadies? Well, the type of soil that is in your yard has a bearing on water needs. And most of the time, the soil amendments are needed for plant health and survival. Like bark mulch, peat moss, or aged manure mixed in with your native soil is going to improve your plant's success, and often less water is needed to keep the plant growing when you do that kind of combination of materials, because the roots, bark mulch, for instance, or peat moss, once it gets damp, it stays damp longer than just soil. If it were just straight soil in there, it would retain moisture, say 8 days, 7 days, something like that.
Yeah.
But if you have it mixed like 50-50 with bark mulch or peat moss or a combination of that kind of thing, it's going to last a little bit longer. Mm. So that's going to also cut your watering needs, but also save the plant at the same time in prolonged dry periods. So those are the kind of things that you have to be aware of when you're planting.
Right.
You know, just because you're living the city limits and you turn on the faucet and it squirts out, that's okay in good years. But one of these years, you never know when, the water supply is way down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are opponents of dam construction. And when you have dam construction to have large bodies of water to feed municipalities and business, et cetera, there's less of a risk. But oftentimes, there's a big emotional fight over those kinds of things.
Such as timber as well.
Yeah, same thing with timber, exactly. But here's a real simple soil test, of course, for your yard is dig up some soil, you know, feel it. Does it crumble and break apart real nicely? Or does it turn into a hard ball of clay? You know, you try to break it up, but it doesn't break up. It just kind of gloms together like clay. Well, you know, the crumbly soil needs a little organic material mixed in, and then the ball of clay needs much more organic soil added to make sure that it will be able to grow. We got a call?
We do have a call.
Okay.
Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Tom Nelson here.
Tom Nelson, how are you, buddy?
Well, fine.
Good.
Hey, if I have some Doug fir trees that I've grown since, they were seedlings, now they're probably 3, 4, 5 foot tall.
Uh-huh.
If I prune them up from the bottom, maybe take about a third of, to where two-thirds are branches and a third are clipped off, does that help as far as the tree being able to put more energy towards the growth upwards?
Well,
or
yes.
Does it matter?
Yes, it does. I would not cut more than a third, off the bottom branches, because less branches. See, the root system is still the same size. So you cut off the branch, say a third of the branches. Well, that root system is still functioning. So the energy and the food requirements that it sends up the tree bypasses those places where there's no more branches and goes immediately into what's left. And consequently, you get better, more fast, luxurious growth.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
And then my second question, yes, it does.
Okay.
So it sounds like I was doing something right.
You are. good job, Tommy.
So my second question is, I want to get my lawns looking as nice as they look over there at Legion Field. I don't know what you do over there at Legion Field to make that grass look so nice.
It's fake grass. It's fake grass, Tom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, right.
So my question is, can you put a weed and feed fertilizer on your lawns now? Does that do any good?
Well, don't put a weed and feed on because it won't work on the weeds. But you can lightly fertilize your lawn with a straight lawn fertilizer, a good one, not a cheap one on sale for $1.99, but something you actually have to pay $15 for. But it'll do anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 square feet. And I don't know how big your lawn is, but you would be doing it lightly anyway. Like on all of our maintenance projects that we do, we got about 40 maintenance accounts around the county. We fertilized this, there was one about a month ago that we had installed like in September, I believe, sod. And it was okay at first, and then the heat was starting to deplete it, and it was yellowing up a little bit. Not badly, but a little bit. So we pumped extra fertilizer to it. Extra meaning not so much per time, but more frequently. And right now it's just deep green, looking good. And we will probably, and we fertilized, I think the last time we fertilized it was about 2 weeks ago, and it's gorgeous. So if you do it lightly, but do it frequently, you'll get more bang for the buck.
And what are the most important ingredients in that?
There's always nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Nitrogen is always the first percentage. It might say 20, the combo might be 20, 10, 10, or 20, 15, 15. Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The phosphorus and the potassium are for root growth and overall health, and then the nitrogen is the greener upper. And so if the directions say you need 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet, go half that and spread it evenly. And then watch, in this time of year, it might take longer because it's wetter and colder, but see how the grass is turning. Maybe it'd take a month before it starts to really green up, and then you'll kind of get the feel for it. And then skip January totally, but February starts to warm up a little bit and it's still wet and everything. Then you do it lightly in February and maybe lightly in March again, and you'll have a real strong lawn as a consequence.
And how about putting iron in the moss areas and stuff this time of year?
I don't know. I don't think iron does it. You mean you're talking wild, natural, native moss?
Yes.
Yeah. You want to kill it?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you try? I was gonna say battery acid, but is that in the lawn or beside the lawn or what?
It's in. Actually, it's both, but more in the lawn is what I'd be interested in killing.
Okay, well the thing is with the high nitrogen lawn food, that will deplete it. That will kill it, because what'll happen is the grass will go stronger and get better and shade out or crowd out the moss. And when you get to a mossy area, put a little extra right on that mossy area just to kind of burn it a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Sounds good.
Okay. I want
you
to call me back. Call me back and tell
me
your results.
Thank you for all your
wisdom. Oh, yeah, right.
Okay, we'll do.
Okay, buddy. Thanks for calling, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Perfect timing. How about that? Right into another break. We'll be right back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here for you on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Are we back yet?
We are.
Well, good thing I'm not going to California or Ashland.
Yes, absolutely. You ain't going to get there from here.
You know, I've been caught in that situation down there when my father-in-law and mother-in-law lived just right out of Reno a ways, and we'd go down at Christmas time with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
One of our trips, it was like on the 23rd of December. It was snowing like a banshee over the Siskiyous, and we got down there, and there was very little traffic on I-5. I couldn't figure it out. And we get to Highway 89, where you go over the Sierra Nevadas over to Eastern California.
Uh-huh.
I did not see one car in 3 hours.
Wow.
Not one car in 3 hours. Not behind me or not coming at me. And I had a 57 Chevy with chains on, and we were just going. And my daughter Jill was like 5, and she was scared to death laying on the back floor in the back seat.
You mean you didn't have her buckled?
No, we didn't have buckles in them days. Didn't have masks either. And so we finally get down into Susanville area where the road 395 kind of flattens out there. And we had another 30 miles to go. We left in the morning, say, 8 or 9 o'clock, and we got there at 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock that night.
Oh.
We knocked on the front door, and Marianne's mom came and says, "You're here? What? How'd you get here?" I said, "Well, we drove." She said, "How'd you drive? They closed all the highways this afternoon."
Oh, geez.
But I never saw a sign. There was no cars out there. There was no cops out there. There was no, ODOT or any of those things out there to tell me that the highway was closed.
Your radio didn't work?
No, it didn't.
Oh.
Not in the snowstorm. and I drove all that way. And to find out that the roads were closed. And I thought, well, we're here. I'm hungry.
Man.
Got anything to eat?
Yeah. Dinner served?
It was a miracle.
One
of the many miracles that has occurred in my life, I'll tell you.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. So, anyway, I've been talking about organic soils and how to keep things alive. And when you plant stuff, make sure, everything works. And the amended soil that I was speaking about in the last segment, remember, that drains very well, and new roots will be able to grow quickly into that amended soil. And on the other extreme, with clay soil, the plant roots can't penetrate easily and are more prone to root rot due to overwater, and consequently the plant dies. And when a plant, the initial reaction from a person who's not familiar with how plants grow is if the leaves are brown or something like that, they sock more water to it. And the reason the leaves are brown is because the roots have been rotted off from too much water. And the plant is dying. And I've had that conversation with many people at the nursery. And when they describe, their situation, I said, "Well, what do the leaves look like?" That's the first question I ask. And they say, "Well, they're kind of brown on the edge and curling." I said, "That's too much water. Have you put your finger down in there? Have you tested the soil?" "Well, no." I said, "Test the soil."
Yeah.
And if it feels wet an inch or two down, it's really, really wet a foot down. And that's usually solid.
That's a good indication.
Well, yeah, it's a simple one. You don't need a hydrologist to tell you that. And you can, take a little shovel and just shovel it out and say, "Oh, yeah." And then I tell them about how to amend the soil, what ingredients to add to it, blah, 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 blah. And it turns their landscape around. So, of course, they have to buy new plants, but that's okay.
Yeah. You always have them in stock.
We have some, yes. But think about this. Plants that are grown professionally in a nursery, they have the best of potting soil mixes they could possibly have so that they initiate growth very quickly. There's no setbacks. They can, and when you water them, it drains through. It gets the roots wet, but it doesn't sit in water, and it drains through. So, and they have to have oxygen in there as well. So there's a certain amount of oxygen that can get into a potting mix type thing. So somebody comes into the nursery and says, "All these nice plants. Says, I want those 3 and those 5 and those 6," and they don't realize that the soil inside that pot is the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you pull the best of the best out of the pot and stick it in clay and stomp clay around it, you're defeating the whole purpose.
Yeah.
And And the more you can, I can educate people to that, the more success they're going to have.
And I wish you could have talked to my dad about that stuff.
Well, bring him on in next week and we'll talk to him. But just think about that. They are planted in A number one stuff. And, you know, when we grow about 5,000 plants a year in our greenhouses, and when you do a cutting, we dip it into a rooting hormone, and then we put it in perlite. Perlite is very light, white, kind of fluffy stuff. It's what you and you wouldn't think it could grow anything, but you stick the cut stems in that, and it roots out within a week or two.
Wow!
Because you're watering every day, but the water runs through, and it's not soggy, and you've already dipped them in the rooting compound, and so consequently, and we've got bottom heat at the same time, and that throws the roots in about a week, maybe 2 weeks.
Wow.
And if you can duplicate that kind of thing, see, that's how we start. Then when they're fully rooted in the flats, there's 100 little plants in a flat. Flat is like 20 by 20 or something like that, and it's about 3 inches deep. And you take them out and you plant them in a 4-inch pot. And, you know, because if you put them in a big pot, it'll work, but it's better if they're more confined. Mm. And consequently, you put them in a 4-inch pot with that real super good mix with the potting soil, a little bit of sand, and that kind of stuff. And the roots just continue to bust out. And within, 2 to 3 months, they're big enough that you can put them in the 1 gallon size pots. And you do the same kind of mix. And they're in just a few short months, they're ready to go. They're ready to be sold because they're fully rooted out. And if you can think in those lines as your yard's a big pot, now how do I make the big pot better? You know, is it clay, which most of Douglas County is, and how do I make that better? Well, you dig an oversized hole, fill it with good stuff, then plant your plant, and then it's going to go. And then when it's vigorous, when the roots are vigorous and is growing, you know, really, really good, when it hits the clay, it doesn't just die. It takes a little bit longer, but the root system is so vigorous that it can penetrate that clay so much easier. The cool thing about clay, there's good stuff about clay. Since it doesn't drain, it's chock full of nutrients. The nutrients don't drain out, whereas in the fluffy stuff, fluffy soil, the nice soil, nutrition and water and everything drains out very quickly.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, that's
it's kind of a trade-off.
Yeah, you got to find the happy medium there.
Yeah.
And not every yard in Douglas County is just pure clay, just the ones I've lived in, but and my clients. But there are some areas in Douglas County where it's, you know, fairly nice soil, but you should still amend it with some sort of a mulch or a potting soil, you know, mixture in with what you have, and it just improves the overall growth very quickly.
Oh.
So, no calls? What's the matter?
Yeah.
You guys aren't listening out there.
Maybe they're stuck in traffic.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully not a snowstorm. We got to get home. Oh, golly. Okay. So,
Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break because I got my pages mixed up here.
Get your thoughts back together.
Yeah.
We'll be right back in a couple of minutes for more Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And welcome back. 4:52.
Where did time go, man?
Ah, absolutely.
Yeah,
we had Kyle in here for a little while.
That's true. And I got 3 pages of notes, and I'm not going to get them done. But in the interim, I want to read something that I got my wife did it over our... what do you call them? Internet thingy, yeah, whatever. And it's from a friend of mine who thought this was clever, so I'll read it. I might get punched off the air, but that's okay. And it says, we have a neighborhood posting board, like most neighborhoods called, next door. And this was posted the other day, and I wanted to share it. Christmas lights. It says, I don't mean to be a Grinch. However, if those of you who are placing Christmas lights and decorations in your yard, would you please avoid anything that has red or blue flashing lights together? Every time I come around the corner, I think that it's the police. I have to brake hard, toss my margarita out the window, fasten my seatbelt, throw my cell phone on the floor, turn the radio down, push the gun under the seat, all while trying to drive. This is too much drama, even for Christmas. Thank you for your cooperation and understanding.
I love it.
You know, I just had to read that.
Yeah.
And the guy who sent that to me is a doctor.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he's a doctor. But he's been a friend of mine for a lot of years.
So. Nice to know doctors have a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah, this guy does. He'd like him. Anyway, I'm protecting him. I'm not going to tell him the name.
Local?
Oh, yeah. Local.
Okay.
Going on to what is a Christmas plant? Well, there's a lot of plants you can buy for Christmas. You know,
poinsettia is one of them.
Well, that's true. That's true. That is the Christmas plant.
Ah.
The poinsettia.
The man.
Yeah, but it's red leaves, multicolored leaves, yes. Pink leaves. It comes in with, I've got some in there that are basically red with white dots all through the leaves. Really, really, really pretty. Yeah,
yeah,
very interesting. In the past, it's always, poinsettias are just red.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the box stores, most of them are just red.
Red.
But we have at least four different types in our florist department. And they're gorgeous. They're really, really, really pretty. Especially the multicolored ones. I mean, all of them are pretty, but the multicolored ones are really good. Well, the general idea that it's only a Christmas plant, right? Because that's the only time we ever see them around here. However, you can have it year-round as an indoor plant, and most folks don't because it seems like because it might be in foil paper, and they water it and water it and water it, and guess what?
Oh.
It's overwatered, bing, and the leaves fall off.
Drown.
And all that. Exactly right. You get that, don't water it so much and take that paper off, you can have it as a year-round indoor plant. Put it in a bigger pot.
That's my problem.
Yeah. And I was told by some experts some years ago that it wouldn't work as an indoor plant. So just out of spite, I had to plant one in a large pot and put it near a window, and it was very green for about 3 years. It grew about 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide and needed very little care.
Mm.
Actually, it was in a friend's office in downtown Roseburg, but I called it mine. So I know they do well as an indoor plant. And these professional plant people came in and took care of their plants through this office complex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they couldn't believe that those poinsettias had gone from that little tiny thing into a 3 foot tall shrub and he had large pots.
Jeez.
And it was gorgeous. The reason they didn't turn color and turn red was because they need at least 16 hours of darkness every day for the leaves to turn red.
Hmm.
Yeah. And
you think it'd be just the opposite.
You would think so, but that's not how it is. Yeah. But I know they do well as an indoor plant. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about, if they get kind of leggy or whatever and you go to prune them, a white sap will immediately come out of the cut.
Huh.
And so what I learned when I was pruning some for a business years ago, I had a lighter, a cigarette lighter, and I'd cut, and then I'd put the lighter on the end and cauterize the cut. And so the sap would not run out.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you don't cauterize it, it will basically bleed to death.
Oh.
You know, I mean, or at least get really, really sick
very
quickly because it's losing its vitality. It's losing its lifeblood, if you will.
Yeah, you cut its main artery.
Exactly. Yeah, just cut your wrist and see what happens.
But,
I learned that by, there are some indoor plants you got to do that to. Then you cut them, and all of a sudden you'll see the sap coming out. You got to cauterize the wound, and it'll stop it, and it'll continue to grow. You know, and naturally they grow in like Central America and Mexico and all that kind of stuff. And I've already said on the show several times, I've seen them 10 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
That was like, down in South America.
It was in Guatemala.
Guatemala.
And I didn't know what they were. I was walking by them and all of a sudden I went, you know, that looks familiar, but I can't place it. And I looked way up in the top and some of the leaves were red. And I went, it's a poinsettia growing out here in the wilds,
it's
man.
A poinsettia tree.
but they don't get snow or cold or ice. So consequently, it might get to 50 degrees, you know. That's the low temp. And the high temp is, you know, 80, 90 or something like that the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So consequently, they do well. They're just a shrub. They're just brush down there. And we pay fancy prices for them up
here. Nothing more than a weed.
Yeah, and to grow them in a greenhouse, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's warm, it's rainy. That's what they need. And I've seen it in a couple of those cities and towns where they've cut it into a hedge. And it looks good. I mean, it's really pretty. And or you can like let them grow naturally and prune off the ancillary branches and select one center stem and grow it into a poinsettia tree. Which is, you know, not many people do that. Those are the kind of crazy things I try just to see if it'll work. And you can. It works that way.
Probably can't climb it, though.
No, the limbs are very, very weak in that respect. And the leaves are green naturally. And like I say, if you have them at home or if you grow them at home, to turn them red, the plant has to be dark for 2 or 3 weeks. We're done.
All right.
We're done?
We're done.
Good.
What are we going to talk about next week?
The rest of my notes that I wrote up for this week, more Christmas stuff, more Christmas plants and things you can buy for people that don't know what to buy them for a gift. Hey, yeah, everybody likes a plant, just about.
There you go.
Yeah,
we'll only be a couple of days before Christmas by next week.
Really? Huh.